Hello, welcome back to the David Watson podcast. Today I spoke with Mike Rees, a chap that's actually been on before. And for his sins, he is running for the Wiltshire Police Commissioner role again. One that is extremely politically driven, and Mike is running as an independent. And I'm going to find out why on earth he's doing it again. Hello, welcome back. It's been a few years. How are you doing?
Hello, David. It's nice to see you again.
And you?
Didn't think I'd be back here again, but I am.
I thought one day I might get you back on to talk about boxing. I didn't think I'd be getting you back on to talk about this, which is...
I wish we were talking about boxing.
Yeah. Why? Why are you doing it again? What's happened?
Well, after the last election, I said I'd never do it again. It was quite getting involved in that politics that goes around that job. Although I'm not a political person and I stand as an independent, it was quite unpleasant. There was a lot of unpleasant things happening. I was told by a particular party that they were trying to find dirt on me. They didn't. Don't know how they looked, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things like that going on around. I think, God, are they so that desperate to get this job? You know, why are political parties so keen to get this job? And it was a stressful, unpleasant experience, if I'm totally honest. I said, no, again, came very close to winning. And over the last, 3 years now, I've still maintained, I'm not going to do it again. I'm not putting myself through that again. And you just watch what's going on in politics and the lies, the corruption, the deceit, the scandal around politics at the minute. And you think, how can you trust these people, you know? And I was kind of got inspired as well by the recent Rochdale election, a guy called David, who was a local garage owner, who came second. To George Galloway, and I've got my own thoughts on George Galloway, but
yeah, same here.
But I thought there's something going on here. People are rebelling against politics, and so I actually rang David and spoke to him and said, "Look, you know, how did you go about this?" And we had a good chat, and I put the phone down and thought, "Do you know what? I think people are fed up with politicians. This is a role that a politician should not have. And in the absence of anyone else standing as an independent candidate, I spoke to my wife, because the big thing is, apart from having no funding, really, to do any promotion and that sort of thing, the big thing for us was you got to put a £5,000 deposit down. And that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree that the candidate should have to do that, but that's the rules. And we spoke about it and agreed that we would risk it. You know, it would hurt a lot if we lost it. But we're trying to do something good. We're trying to change things. And so just decided to do it again. And I mean, she has called me something else since that time. Why are you doing this? I think you're crazy. She didn't use the word crazy. She used a far worse word. But, you know.
I should call you an Englishman.
I'm ready to do it again.
One of the things I was going to say, because how many years were you a police officer?
So I was a police officer for 30 years. I joined in 1984 at the age of 18. And retired in 2014, well, at the age of 48, almost 49. So I did my 30 years.
So you did 30 years as a police officer, and they spent an awful lot of their own resources trying to find dirt on you and your family. And let's be honest, it wouldn't have been hard to find it, because you've been a police officer for 30 years. So if you'd have had any investigations or anything like that, it wouldn't have been difficult. You also have your own charity as well, don't you? The Fat Boys Charity?
Yeah, for the last 25 years, I've been running a children's cancer charity called Fat Boys.
Yeah.
And Yeah, and that, like I say, this it's our 25th year this year. We've probably raised £500,000 over the years. We started off as a local charity. We help kids all through the UK now. At Christmas time, those dealing with cancer and leukemia, we buy them Christmas presents, and that's been a real success, you know. And it's been a lot of work, but it's been a real success, and I've run that alongside my working life.
And this is the thing. It's funny how the other candidates go to all of these lengths to try and, like, we've just got to find something on you. You know, we're not going to tackle you with policy. We're not going to tell you why your policies are wrong. We're not going to tell you why our policies are better. We're not going to tell you how we're going to improve the system, how we're going to help policing in the community, how we're going to make policing more efficient, sort out these closed stations. Where's the money gone? No, none of that. We're just going to find out if we can get some dirt on you to tarnish your reputation.
And I'm, you know, having been through it previously, I'm expecting that to possibly happen again, that, I don't know, something might come along. You know, none of us have been complete 100% angels during our lives, I suppose. And if you want to
find I've always been public about the fact I'm an ex-offender. Do you know what I mean? I got into trouble 20 years ago. You know, so it turns out 20 years is a long time.
And I know that some things are being said already. You know, I know that I've been referred to as just a, although I'm an ex-police officer, and people are saying, you know, some people will say that makes me more qualified for the job. Some of my political opponents have said that all I was a middle manager in a failing force. Now, I'd argue that, right. Do you think the chief constable is the one out on the streets making things happen? All right. Yeah, but yeah, I was a middle manager. I was a detective inspector. It's your inspectors, your sergeants, possibly your chief inspectors that make things happen. And I made things happen. Okay. I had a good reputation. And it was all about catching the bad guy and keeping criminals off the streets. And I did that. Yeah, if you want to refer to me as a middle manager, yes, I was, but I made things happen. And I've carried that on in my business world. Failing force when I was there? No, we were known. In fact, the slogan for the force then was Primus et Optimus, first and best, Latin for first and best. Failing force? Well, I think you'll find it's a failing force now because it's in special measures. That wasn't while I was there. That's, you know, 10 years after I left. So that's a bit of a gift for me, for someone to slander me in that way. I know that they've been saying, oh, he's just going to be pro-police. But that's not the case, you know.
Then surely... sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but actually, why shouldn't you be pro-police? Because police in 1984 could be seen on the streets. Towns in 1984 had police stations that were open. Had police stations, right? Whereas, so in 1984, none of the police forces were under special measures. So, why can't, because to me, being pro-police means being proactive. It means being in the community. It means supporting the police officers to do the job the community wants them to do. And all the community really wants police to do is, if I ring you, can you come round and sort out this burglary? If I ring you, can you come and look for my car? Someone's nicked. Or damaged or scratched, or
the most valuable asset and the most expensive asset when you look at the budget of a police service is its staff, officers and police staff. They're demotivated, if they're demoralized, you're not going to get a good service. So of course, you know, I think it's a ridiculous comment as well. You've got to look after the people within the organization. However, I am more than capable of holding senior officers to account. They're the ones that are answerable to the service, to the public. Now, if I bought a car, okay, would I, and I'm not quite sure whether it's running right or not, so I've bought it that day, I get someone in to look at it. Would I get a dentist in to look at it? Or would I get someone who knows what they're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
A mechanic, someone who's been a mechanic for a long time, you know, a dentist might say, well, it sounds like it's running right. And the mechanics say, no, that's not quite right, and this is why.
But in any other walk of life, right, you would look, if you were a young man starting out in any industry, the first thing somebody would do is recommend you got a mentor with 30 years experience in that industry, in that business. If somebody said, oh yeah, you know, if I was joining the police force and there was some guy who's on 28, got a couple of years to go, who took me under his wing, probably the best experience, the best apprenticeship, best education I could serve would be under that person. Because how many times have you had to go and meet somebody and deliver bad news? How many times have you had to go and meet somebody and arrest them, you know, in the wrong place at the wrong time? All of those difficult things that families have to go through, either as the victim of crime, the victim of a tragic accident, or because you're arresting the person that was the cause of those things. How many politicians have done that? I mean, the biggest problem we have in this country right now is we've got Rishi Sunak as a prime minister who's worth an estimated 700 million, telling people on minimum wage, don't worry, you'll be fine. The Tories are going to look after you. Because that prime minister is so detached from any, I bet you when he was a kid, his pocket money was more than six figures a year. Do you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like...
It's like I say, I've got the knowledge, okay? Oh. And I've been reading, I've looked at some, the PCC's, some of the documentation that PCC has put out. I've looked at meetings he's had with the police and crime panel. And he states in there, from memory, that Wiltshire Police are now offering value for money. Where's the evidence? Okay, you keep increasing the precept. Where's the increase in the quality of service?
Yeah.
Now, I can't see any evidence in any document that shows that they are offering value for money. Similarly, the chief constable recently said that after a year in post, it's in a far better place. Hmm. Where's the evidence? Because that's not what I'm hearing from people that are still working within the service. That's not what I'm hearing from the man down the pub or the lady in the shop. You know, people are not happy with the service they're receiving. And the force is in special measures. Whether it's going to come out of special measures anytime soon, I don't know. But they need to be held to account. PCC is there to manage the budget, help them move on, help them develop. I don't see it. At the minute, I don't see it. It's in a, with no disrespect to the Chief Constable or Mr. Wilkinson, I appreciate it's a very difficult job. But I'm looking at some of the things that are going on and thinking, where's that coming from? Why has Salisbury not got a police station yet? Okay, yeah. I know there's some, allegedly some plans for it to happen, but we were talking about that 4 years ago,
You and I had that conversation 4 years ago.
They're spending somewhere in the region of £90 million over the next 10 years for police headquarters to be developed. By the time you get to the end of that 10 years, that's going to be a lot more than 90 million. Okay, so to say it's 90 million quid, it's going to be a lot more by the time you get to the end of 10 years. How does that improve the service to the public of Wiltshire by developing police headquarters, which is essentially a training area and office-based staff? How does that benefit the people of Wiltshire? And all that money is being spent, taxpayers' money is being spent on it. And someone needs to say where's the business case for that? You know, there seems to be little evidence behind what is actually going on at the minute.
I see it with Salisbury, because Salisbury still doesn't have a custody suite. So if somebody gets arrested and are going to be detained, I think they get taken to Devizes or Trowbridge.
No, they go to Swindon.
They go to Swindon now. Okay.
This current moment in time, because they used to go to Melksham. Because that's now being refurbished, they're having to go to Swindon.
So the thing I don't understand is, you have police officers in Ainsbury still. They just don't open the front desk.
Yeah.
But Ainsbury Police Station is still there. Yeah. Police officers still use it. I know that because when I, unfortunately, I had to, last 3 years ago, I had to, a friend of mine died and I had to go and get the keys because I ID'd the body and stuff. And I just rang the phone box, because that's where they told me to go. They just ring the phone outside and somebody came and let me into the police station. So there's still an operational police station for the police. They just don't have anybody. And I know it has a custody suite and cells, because I spent time in them as a teenager. I've been interviewed there. So I know from personal experience.
First hand knowledge of that then, David.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Won't do like.
It was I wasn't worried about that back then. I was more worried about what my parents were gonna say. Funnily enough, I lost my appetite. So it's just like, hang on a second. Why, like, you know, why are you driving an hour to Swindon?
Yeah.
When
in custody, you're taking an officer off the street, so well, somewhere in the south of the county, Salisbury, wherever.
Well, just
they have to take the prisoner up to Swindon. They'll have to be there for some time with the prisoner, waiting for solicitors, the interviews. They may not even get dealt with till the next day, in which case the other people have got to go up. You know, it's a farcical situation.
There was something, because many, many years ago when I lived in London, I was an appropriate adult, right? And I don't know what appropriate adult schemes are like now, but back then you lived in the custody suite, right? So processing, people don't realise this, like, because it's the simple thing is, if you got pulled over in Salisbury and got breathalysed in Salisbury, that is going to be, by the time they've breathalysed you, door to door, from you getting arrested, getting taken to Swindon, calibrating the machine, making sure it's all done, that's probably going to take 2 hours from the moment you failed the breath test, because you're then going to be read your rights, car secured, formally arrested. Then they, you know, and they're not going to hit blues and twos to get you to Swindon. They're going to drive normally.
Right? Yeah.
And that's if they don't send somebody to collect you. Right? So you can't tell me police officers aren't looking at that thinking, yeah, you failed your breath test, but it's not worth taking you to Swindon because you'll probably be clear by the time we get you there.
Well, it's, you know, I understand that one of the reasons for not putting a custody suite in Salisbury is now is the lack of the figures around arrests don't justify it. Well, they always used to justify it. You might find that those figures have dropped dramatically because officers are now deterred from arresting people because they know they're going to have to go to Swindon, they're going to be off the streets. It is a completely farcical situation.
I remember when you had the police station open on Wilton Road in Salisbury.
Yeah.
The front desk was never empty of people in there with inquiries, asking about things, reporting things. And like you said, if I'm a police officer and I know I've got to, I arrest you and I'm and it's going to be an hour from Salisbury to Swindon, traffic permitting, then I've got to process you, and then I've got and all that, right? And if I actually live in Fordingbridge, which is half an hour from Salisbury, that's an hour and a half from Swindon, and I know that I'm going to finish my shift in Swindon, and then I've got to drive an hour and a half home.
Yeah.
No. I'll do everything in my power not to arrest you.
Exactly. And that might account for the fact that the prisoner rate is just fallen.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the police station was there, that wasn't an issue.
No.
I understand, you know, sometimes if you just want to take someone to an interview room, they have to be booked in. I understand there's only one room in Salisbury where you can do that. It's just ridiculous.
Well, my understanding is there's no custody sweep. And for people that don't understand what that means, that means the custody sweep is actually where the detention cells are, so people can temporarily be held in remand until court on Monday morning. But it also means that that's typically where the processing centre is for when people get... Is that correct? That is correct, isn't it?
That's where if people are arrested, they go to a custody sweep.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for anyone else, that just means the cell.
Yeah.
And you normally have a very narrow, waterproof mattress. And they're not too bad. I've had worse. Do you know what I mean? I will say for the record, it's 20 years since I've slept on one. So just for the record, you know.
Still fresh in your memory, though.
You know, life is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, we were all young once.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's an important part of a police station, because if you've got a processing center in your town, in your city, well, then you also have that hive where the police are acting from a central space, and everything is going in and out of that custody suite. You'll have your custody sergeant, the inspector, and everything is going through that with a chain of command. Because if you're based in Salisbury, You can't tell me. Well, I'll find it hard to believe that if you go to Swindon, you're welcomed with open arms. Because there's got to be station rivalry, different. Because you're under different budgets, different inspectors, different sergeants. I'm not saying people are going to screw you over, but it's not like your locker's there, is it?
No. I don't know. I think that's probably a bit harsh. I think it'd be accepted there, and it's not a problem. Cause it's
no,
just
I don't mean like that. What I mean is it's not your office, is it? Do you know what I mean? No. It's like hot desk.
You probably feel uncomfortable there because it's not your usual surroundings.
Yeah, and you don't have a locker there. It's not where you've left your coat. You know, it's not where your civvy clothes are. And you're going to get there, and you've got to learn who everybody is, because you're going to come across other officers who are probably also coming to Swindon from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And you're never going to come across a familiar face. I mean, when you and I were talking at the beginning, one of the things that like you in your role, right? You win the election, there's nothing a constable's going to tell you that you haven't already done or seen.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're in the same custody suite with the same group of sergeants, you're going to build that relationship where mentorship comes from, where a sergeant does pull you up because he's a little bit more invested in you because he's seen you 5 times already this week because you go through the same door as he does. You work in the same shift patterns. He's the one that's got to make sure you've done your paperwork correctly. But when you're just in like a hot desk in situation where nobody gives a shit whether you're coming or going, or even knows if you're coming or going, that's the other thing as well. Accountability goes out the window when you've actually got no one to hold you accountable.
Yeah. And it would appear to me that they're not being held to account, you know, and so saying I'm pro, going back to the pro police thing, I mean, I've been there, I've done it, I know what they're going through, I know what it's like to deal with a rape victim, I know what it's like to deal with a rapist or interview a murderer, I've done all that. So I can see what they're going through, and I can understand how they're feeling, and understand why they're demoralised. You look at the leadership, and this is not true of all the leadership, you know, there are some good leaders there. But there are also some there that I would not class as true cops.
Yeah.
Admin people, pen pushers, I would call them.
Yeah.
And they don't look after their staff. A lot of them do not look after their staff. And that's a real important part of motivating your workforce. You've got to listen to them and act on what they're telling you. And it would appear to me that you've got a demotivated, demoralized service. And when they're like that, you know, a happy workforce is a productive workforce. Well, they're in special measures. That says a lot.
And that's the thing. I don't understand why. And this is a good example of politics, to throw out a phrase like, well, because you're an ex-copper, you'll be pro-police. What? Yeah. So you're asking me to vote for somebody that isn't pro-police. Why would I vote for someone that isn't? I want somebody who's got the forces back. I want somebody who's going to say, look, you know, you're in special measures. We need to do something productive about this. Get you all back to being professional. Get you all back to the top, you know, top of the class, top of your job, because that's how you stop crime. That's how the community knows who their local police officers are, you know.
I've looked through quite a few documents in the last few days, you know, public documents from PCC and chief officers, and if you pardon the phrase, it's a thin veneer of bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's the same thin veneer that I was listening to 10 years ago. Mm. I go back to the second-hand car where the dentist says, well, it sounds like it's running all right. That'll be a politician. It doesn't scrape beneath the surface or know where to look.
Doesn't care.
I know where to look.
Yeah.
I know how to dig deeper. And you've got to scratch beneath the surface to see what's really going on. I went to a recent meeting at the council, an area board meeting, and I listened to the local inspector saying how low violent crime was and how low the recording of it was over the past 3 months. He asked if there's any questions, so I put my hand up. So what's the detection rates? You know, oh, I don't have those. So, right, okay. So when you've talked about these meetings, he was from the MPT, you've talked about these meetings you've held at the library where people could come in and speak to you. I said, personally, as a member of the public, which I am now and have been for 10 years, I'm a member of the public. I really don't care how many people you saw at the library last Saturday. What I want to know is, my house gets burgled. Are you going to turn up? Are you going to investigate it? And are you going to catch the person responsible? And have you got those figures? No. And if you look, you try and find detection figures for the force, and you can't, or they're very, very well hidden if they are available. But I've tried several options, and various other people have tried to get detection figures for the force. They're not available, and that's not acceptable. How do you measure performance? That's an important thing for me as a member of the public, and how your police force is performing. Telling me how many have been recorded means nothing to me, because how many people couldn't get through on 101 and gave up? How many people don't even bother reporting it to the police anymore because they know it's a waste of time? That's not a measure of what's happening. A true measure of what's happening is true recording, and also knowing what the detection rate is. Now, what's the reason for not publishing those detection rates? I think it's pretty obvious, because they're pretty poor.
But you mentioned something probably even more important. As people have got to a place now where they just don't bother. They have no confidence in the police now that they don't even bother. And an interesting thing, I don't know if you've seen this on things like YouTube, but we've got that those American style auditors coming over, appearing now on YouTube, where people are filming the police or just filming in general, and then police will come over to them. I haven't seen one for Wiltshire yet. I will just caveat that. But I was watching one the other day. Me and a friend were talking about it, and this guy's just filming like a late night in Newcastle. Two police officers come over. Hello, sir. What are you doing? Oh, just filming. Why? Because I want to. I can. It's a public space. You know. You got any ID? Is there a reason you're speaking to me? I haven't. Do you suspect me of a crime? And this went on for about 10 minutes, and he was just like, "You haven't told me what you suspect me of doing. You haven't told me why you want to talk to me, or anything like that." He says, "I'm not required to give you any ID," and he said, "It's just that simple." He said, "Oh, you can arrest me, and at that point, tell me what the crime is that I'm being arrested for, because you approached me." So they left. Next thing, two big burly undercover coppers come over. Do announce that they're undercover, and we're doing things. We're checking people because of suspicious activity. He said, "No, you've been sent over by those two police officers." And he said, "And again, what is the crime that you are accusing me of?" "Oh no, we're just checking you're all right." "Well, what does that mean? What does that all right mean? Because again, you've travelled some distance from one end of the high street all the way to the other to come and see me. But again, you're not telling me what for. And now you're trying to," and they said, "Oh, well, we're just checking people's mental health." But I haven't asked you for anything. I'm stood here minding my own business with a camera in a public space, breaking no laws. And you've got like 20 minutes before the police eventually just leave him alone. And you're just like, Jesus Christ, what is happening to you guys? Because you're out late on a Friday, Saturday night, and you've got a guy with a camera in high-vis jacket. He's not doing it, you know, and he's not breaking any laws, and you're hassling him. And you're getting more and more of these interactions where the police don't even seem to know what the actual laws are. Whereas when I was, you know, when I was younger, police knew what the law was. You know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? I always
Sorry.
remember, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, a police officer telling me when I was doing, when I was an appropriate adult, as a general rule of thumb, he said, "There's only three reasons why we should be approaching you. You're under arrest. You might be able to help us, or we suspect you'll be able to help us with information relating to an accident or a crime, or it's a health and safety issue that will prevent you from getting hurt." So they're the three reasons we have rights to approach you. Do you know what I mean? He says, and it's perfectly reasonable if we suspect you are somebody to ask you for ID to prove you're not. And if you then refuse, because we think you might be that person, we can arrest you. But you can't hassle people just because you want to.
I think that, well, yeah, generally, yeah, I think that there could be circum. I think there's the circumstances where
there are, but a police officer who's actually doing their job properly would know what their circumstances are.
I think you mentioned there the training, and I think the training is not as good as it used to be. And when I joined, you went to a regional training school for, I think it's 14 weeks.
Yeah.
And then you cut the weeks over the next 2 years of your probation. Now it's all pretty much done online.
No way.
Which I don't think it's great. I don't think it's great.
Was it Hendon they used to go to?
Yeah, I mean, that was the Met, used to go to Hendon. But there used to be discipline within that as well. You'd actually be out on parade squares marching, and you'd have to uniform, be smartly presented, and you'd be inspected and all that. And I think, swinging the lamp, I think that was a good introduction to a discipline service. And I think a lot of the discipline has gone out. You've now got a young, inexperienced workforce with not a great amount of training. I think there's a whole rake of issues there that need to be addressed.
I think one of the things that I've noticed, and this is personal experience, but this was Dorset Police, so I won't get into that exactly, but they've lost the art of de-escalating. You know, like, because de-escalation is people look at de-escalation from the point of view of like doorman, where somebody's already in a violent mood or an aggressive mood, and your job is to de-escalate it so it doesn't become physically confrontational. Whereas the I've noticed with police now, with some, not all, because I have still had interactions with some really pleasant police officers, young and old, you know. But there seems to be, like you say, maybe it's that morale thing. They're already in a bad mood. They've already had enough of their job. They've already had enough of being, you know, on special measures and stuff. Because when they're interacting with the police, they just already seem to be in a bad mood. So interacting with the public, they already seem to be in a bad mood about it. And you just you listen to them sometimes, you're like, whoa, that's not how I would have started that conversation.
And there is, I think, again, that will come back to a lot of what life experience has that individual officer had. How young are they? How experienced are they? Because I do still see officers de-escalating situations, but there are some that will go in all guns blazing. And probably learn the hard way that that's probably not the best way to do it. But again, it comes back to training. I think there's a whole rake of issues around there. And we go back to the 90 whatever million pounds that's being spent on headquarters, which includes the training department. There's got to be a real good case, I think, for regionalisation again of training facilities and sharing cost and being more budget efficient for the taxpayer.
Do you remember what was the purpose originally of the role of the PCC?
It was, well, essentially to manage the budget and hold the local police to account.
But originally, wasn't it always supposed to be non-political? In theory, at least.
I've only ever known it be political. Certainly, all we've had in Wiltshire is Conservative PCC the last 12 years.
If
you look around the country, I don't think there are any independent. I know there was a couple previously, prior to the last election, but I don't think there are any in existence now. It's mainly Conservative. And, you know, I was looking through some of the political scandals there have been, and I noticed there's quite a lot of the whips, the Conservative whips, had the whip taken off them. And a few of those were scandalous, you know, sex scandals or whatever. But some of them, they had the whip taken off them because they disagreed with what the party was trying to do.
Yeah.
So what happens to a Conservative PCC if something comes down from the police minister or the Home Secretary or the government, we want you to do this, and the PCC turns around and says, no, I'm not doing it? What's likely to happen to that PCC as a Conservative? She is not going to be too popular. Now, I've got no allegiance to any party, and what I'll say is if I was in post and something was coming down that I didn't think was right for the people of Wiltshire, I'd turn around and say no. If that means I'd get bumped off by MO5 eventually, then so be it.
Sure. For sure.
You know.
And you heard it here first, folks.
I've got no allegiance. for me, it's about what's doing right for the doing what's right for the local community, and that's one of the main reasons I'm standing. You know, because what's happening now, it's not serving the people of Wiltshire well.
So, because one of the things about Wiltshire that's quite diverse is we actually do have, you know, Swindon, although it's not technically a city, it certainly as big place as any city you'll go to, and certainly as diverse. You've got Salisbury City, and you've got some big towns like Trowbridge, Devizes, Amesbury. Then it's also rural countryside, isn't it? So, you know, and we have problems with things like hair coursing. You know, you've got the foxes and all of that. So how do you kind of manage all of those different things?
Well, I know they've set up the rural crime team. Whether that's a solution to rural policing or not, I don't know. Fox hunting's been quite a big issue in recent years. In fact, I regularly get asked what my view on fox hunting is. Well, I'm an animal lover, you know, and I recently lost my dog, which was heartbreaking. But it's, well, the bottom line is fox hunting is illegal.
Yeah.
It's illegal. And it has to be policed fairly. So I've got no issues with people that want to protest against fox hunting. It needs to be done peacefully and lawfully. However, on the spin side of that, you know, any the people associated with what they call trail hunting or drag hunting or whatever, who are riding quads whilst under the influence of alcohol, or driving vehicles under the influence of alcohol, or driving in a dangerous manner, assaulting protesters, no insurance, all those sort of things which seem to get to go on and get ignored, they need to be dealt with. And I think that's a little bit scandalous that they're allowed to get away with that. So that needs to be policed as well as protesters. It needs to be done fairly, you know, without fear or favour. You know, neutrality is really important. But going back to my view on fox, I mean, I don't get it. Any person, how can a person get any enjoyment or thrill out of seeing an animal torn to shreds by a pack of dogs? You've got to have some inadequacy in your life for me. If you get thrill out of that, you've got to be inadequate in some way, either physically, mentally, or sexually, or whatever. You know, there's some sort of inadequacy there that you get a thrill out of that. And it's illegal. Most of the public are against fox hunting, and that's my view on it.
Yeah, I think with fox hunting in particular, because I remember fox hunting a lot when I was growing up, and I grew up kind of very rural. Do you know what I mean? We had pheasants. We used to go ratting and stuff like that with dogs and stuff. And I've never been fox hunting. But there seemed to be a transition in, like growing up in the countryside, like I did, foxes were always just tarnished as vermin. And then kind of things, I guess it's things like the Fantastic Mr. Fox and stuff like that, and stuff like that, and how they're played like Basil Brush and stuff like that. They start getting humanized. So yeah. You've got, like you said, like you and I are probably in the same category, that we kind of have a level of respect for foxes. And, you know, like you said, we're animal lovers. You know, you and I have actually spoken in the past about our passion for our dogs, you know, and foxes to us are just the same as dogs. So if you're attacking a fox, it's just like attacking a dog to you and I. And I'm not defending fox hunting. Do you know what I mean? I'm not pro fox hunting or anything like that. But I do remember that back in the day, I used to go to school with a guy who was the master of the hunt. And foxes were just cockroaches. They were just wasps. It was just vermin. They just did not see them as the same species as the very dogs that they were using to hunt them down. They just completely... It's different, because you were saying about what, like, why is it that they're able to do it? They're just not in the same category as a dog to them. They're not in the same, you know, they treat badgers the same. I mean, you know, they don't see, they're not placed in that category. They're brought up in a particular way that there's a culture enriched with these animals are just a pest. They're disease ridden. You know, and it's every negative connotation that can be thrown at them, which then supports their worldview that, no, they're just vermin. And that's all they are. And how they die is irrelevant.
If you want to dress up and go ride a horse around the countryside, I've got no issue with
Yeah.
that. If you want to rip a dog to fox to shreds, then no.
Yeah.
No. I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't understand the psychology to do something like that.
It's just that you will know from your days as a police officer, there are some people that can do an awful lot of harm to someone else, and while they've still got blood on their hands, ask you for, do you have sugar with that cup of tea? Because they just don't think of, they just don't have that level of remorse. They just don't.
Yeah.
It just doesn't belong to them. They don't have it. Whereas you and I will feel guilty if you haven't got biscuits when I've invited you around for a cup of tea. And that's the nature of human beings, isn't it? And which again, it kind of shows you the many difficult levels of understanding that come with the role, and that has to have, again, being pro police is probably a really good place to start, because being pro police means actually there's a standard that the police can be held to. There's a professional standard that public are entitled to expect, and actually, somebody with 30 years' experience, who did, rise through the ranks, is probably a good place to start.
It's you know, I've been gone 10 years and I'm still passionate about the police service and the service they provide to the public. I hate it when I hear tales of bad service, and I understand what the officers and the police staff are going through. It's really hard. The resources are, you know, they're lacking resources, the demands, the huge demands they have to face on a daily basis.
There's a lack of
And
direction, a lack of leadership as well. It's just not there.
there is a big problem with leadership,
And
and I think they focus too much on data and performance than actually doing the job.
well, here's something else that, like you and I were mentioned before we started recording, and about and mentioned when we just first started recording, that I thought I'd have you back here to talk about boxing, right? But because you run a boxing gym again, and that's taken in young lads, young girls, and it's about leadership, discipline, teaching people to handle life under pressure. Getting punched in the face is pretty hard to deal with, especially in front of a crowd.
No.
And when it hurts, we've all been there where you're feeling a bit cocksure and you get punched in your face. Like, didn't look like you could hit
Yeah.
that hard.
Everyone's got a plan till they get punched in the face.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Mr. Tyson. Do you
Yeah.
know what I mean? And yeah, so again, they're all things where, again, and I appreciate I am somebody that, is trying to do his best to help promote you as well. But there are genuine reasons for that. You run a local community boxing gym. It's not like it's a huge profitable organization that enables you to go on holiday in Barbados,
It cost me a lot of money to do
Yeah,
it,
exactly. Do you know what I mean?
and the other coaches there, you know, and
Yeah, people, it's that constant giving up your free time to make your community a better place.
yeah. I mean, you as a boxing coach, and it's not just me. Any boxing coach would tell you this. You're not just there as someone who will teach them how to box. You're effectively a social worker. You know,
Yeah.
you safeguarding going on all the time. The number of situations I've been in with safeguarding, you know, there's lots. You're a mentor, you're a teacher, you try to instill discipline, respect. I try to get them to get involved in other things like donating things to the homeless. You're trying to make them better people, not just
Yeah.
boxers, but better people. And it doesn't work all the time. You know, you're still going to get those ones that you're probably never going to change. But a lot of the time, you're doing good things. It is having a real positive effect on them. And so it's not just about, I do love boxing, but it's not just about that. You're always a childminder. Even the adults, you know, some of them have come from real bad backgrounds,
Yeah.
and you just take them on and form a relationship with them. And I can talk to people, you know, I can talk to people from any background. And the good thing with a boxing gym is you do get people from all backgrounds, and they interact, build the respect, you know, and it's just a fantastic environment to be in. And I've done it now for what, 7 or 8 years as the head coach there, and loved every minute of it. My
And
wife rarely sees me now, but
She's never been happier, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I know. Do you know, I was trying to think of the phrase, but that's it. Yeah, she loves it. She loves the fact I'm never here. So,
yeah. But it is, isn't it? Because you take them through from all ages. That there's, and like you say, it's not just about learning the skills of boxing. It's about the discipline of anything that you're trying to achieve. And no matter how much effort you put in, you might come up with, against an obstacle that requires you to dig deeper. And and not just that, like you say, you also then look, there's more going on. You know, we've got this community within the gym, and actually there's a community outside that we can help as well as an organization. And because didn't you also start doing some was it for Parkinson's, or you were helping?
I do. So every Wednesday now, I run a class for people with Parkinson's, Wednesday afternoon. And
again, more community stuff.
Yeah, I started that summer last year. Two people turned up, and you kind of thought, well, where's this going? I was a bit nervous about it because what are they capable of? And I was kind of making it up as I went along, really. But now that it's really successful, and we've got, you know, at least a dozen people there every week.
Yeah.
And
and again, it's a community, isn't it? Someone, somewhere for them to go, something for them to do.
And it was the first one in the UK, as far as I'm aware. And now I know it's spreading, you know, which is what I wanted. I wanted it to spread throughout the country so that people would benefit from this. It's been brilliant.
And so it's just like, I mean, taking that phrase pro police, or is it just being pro community, and that requires you to be pro police?
I've always been, even as a cop, I've always been fair with everyone, you know. And I grew up with, you know, I come from a council estate in Wales, and I grew up with a lot of people who ended up in prison, and they were friends, and I still see some of them, you know. And what's the phrase?
It takes one to know one.
So I can talk to people at all levels, you know, and I don't judge anyone from where they came from. I came from a poor background. I get really irate when someone belittles someone because they live in a council house.
Yeah.
That will really upset me. And
do you remember the...
I've done all right for a fat lad, so...
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Do you know what I mean? So, do you remember the Sharps War with Sean Bean?
I never watched it. I do remember it, but I never watched it.
There's a fantastic scene in that I always remembered, where he's only a lieutenant. So he started as a private, becomes a sergeant, saves the Duke. So the Duke gives him a field commission. You can tell I watched this program more than once. Right? Gave him a field commission, and he then gets sent off as lieutenant to take charge of a company, a small company of the Chosen Men. Yeah. And he turns up, and they're just the roughest bunch going. Right? But they are skilled. You know, they're ex-poachers, ex-thieves, you know, but nobody can control them. And one of the things he points out to them is, he says, I'm one of you. I'm not an officer. None of them would like me. None of them would have me. I'm one of you. Every trick you've ever done, everything that's dirty, I've already done it. And no matter what you think you know, I was one of you. And there's nothing you've done that I haven't. And that's the problem with politicians. They've never had a job in the newspaper shop. They never grew up on a council estate. They never started the police force in 1984 as a PC with a Welsh accent in England.
never been in a pub fight or...
Well, yeah, exactly.
Not with sexual assault victims or domestic violence victims. I've done all that. I know what the victims are going through. I know, you know, what the offenders are like. I know what the police officers have to deal with. So I do have a real good understanding.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm going to be pro police, but at the
but
end
again,
of the day,
I'm going to kick back. If you're not going to be like pro police. Pro-police surely has to be getting police back into the community. And I don't mean like on the street. I mean where people actually realise the police are part of your community. Because I think the thing, especially with all these police stations that shut, people no longer feel they have the police in their community.
I think when people say it, that I'm going to be pro-police, I think they're alluding to the fact that I'm just going to let them do what they want to do.
Mm.
I think that's what they mean. And
yeah, I know what they mean. I'm just pulling apart their bullshit. Do you know what I mean? And it's fucking stupid. Because look, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, one of the things that kept me out of trouble was because I knew who all the police were. Because they knew all knew who I was. And that meant that when they caught you drinking and or smoking a bit of pot or something like that, they just dealt with you. Yeah. You know, or when you were 14 and it was 10 o'clock at night, David, why aren't you at home? What were you doing? Do your mum and dad know you're out? You know, are your mum and dad on shift? Are they on late shift? Is that why you're still out? They knew everything about every kid on the estate because yeah. Police were part of the community.
And I don't think that, you know, I'd love to see that again. Whether that ever will happen again, I don't know. I don't think the resources are there. And what you tend to find now is that there's no consistency. So someone could go on to a particular, I mean, when I started, I was on I think it was Gorse Hill in Swindon was my first beat, and then I went to Morden, but I was there for a couple of years, 2-3 years. Now, within weeks, they've moved on somewhere else. They're shifting resources around to accommodate more demands coming down from the government. And there has to be a time when a chief constable has to have the nerve to say, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to focus on the community, focus on the basics, and this is what we're going to do. This is what's important. The people of Wiltshire, we're going to get that right first, then we're going to do the rest.
But you sounds get that easy. Right. And, no, but you get that right, and everything takes care of itself. Because the thing is, when police are an established part of the community, and people know that the police are around, and the police know who everybody is, they know who the burglars are, they know who the dealers are, they know who the punchy fuckers in the pub are, they know all of that. You know, and you get to know people one by one. And ironically, they don't know the law-abiding people, but they do actually get to know the lawbreakers and the troublemakers and the ones who are just a bit cocky. They get to know them all. So when something happens to somebody and you start talking about who that person is, there'll be a police officer. That's right, I know. They'll be down at such and such now, it's 3 o'clock. They'll be in the pub so-and-so, or he'll be at work, I know where he works. Or I know where she works. I know what she does. But now, I can't remember the last time I've seen a police officer.
No,
I wish it was like that when I was younger, getting into trouble.
Yeah, but there has to be a way. I've saved you that night in the cells, wasn't it?
more than once.
Yeah, there has to be a way of putting more resources on it. You know, there's. With technology, and I don't agree with technology to some degree that it can replace humans in certain circumstances. Mm. Like if you want to record crime, an experienced officer or police staff will know what questions to ask to get the maximum information out. I don't think a computer can do that.
No.
Okay, so online recording, I'm not overly keen on. But there are certain tasks that, such as the development now of technology.
Yeah, body cams and stuff like that. Right.
You could take a lot of work. It could free up a lot of people from desk work and put them into other areas, frontline policing.
I've always said I've always pretty much been in customer services or care work in one form or the other. The only people that can deal with people are other people. It's a person job. You can't automate humanity. And if you keep trying to automate, it just shows you've grown beyond your capacity. And as soon as you grow beyond your capacity, you need more people, not more automating or more automation. You need more people, because people dealing with people is how you learn what the problems are. Because, you know, you'd experience this 100 times as a police officer. A fight breaks out or looks like it's going to, trouble kicks off. And it was never because of what somebody thought it was about. You know, more often than not, somebody was already in a bad mood looking for a fight because he's having a rough time. You know, and somebody just happened to accidentally bump into him. And you learn about these things because you're dealing with people. And it's never as simple, this happened or that happened. You know, and there's often And those small moments, those little interventions have just actually come on, you know, suicides. Whenever you got suicides or stuff like that, it was always the things that people missed because nobody was listening.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. The more you automate.
Ones were generally there.
Yeah. The more you automate and the more you try and make it online, the more you try and make it over the phone, the more you miss. Whereas, like I said, pro community police, police that are just in the community. And that can be whether they just turn up at schools or, you know, whatever, just driving around it, you know, yeah. But it's how you serve the community. And that's what they're supposed to be there for.
It makes people feel safe. If nothing else, it makes people feel safe when they see police officers driving around, walking around, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I went to Spain a few weeks ago, and even in a small town, there's a big police station. Mm. And you know what the reputation of Spanish police are like, isn't it? Pretty like cigars and guns, isn't it? We're supposed to be the best police force in the world. Yet Salisbury, one of our main tourist centres, hasn't got a police station.
Mm.
And it's just, I don't understand it. And that needs to be resolved. Rather than talking about it, that seems to have been happening for the last 4 years, it needs to be progressed. It needs someone who can make things happen, and that's what I do.
So, on that final note, where do people find you, and when do they have to go and vote for you?
So, the election's on the 2nd of May. You should get your polling cards through the post.
I have had mine.
And I do have a Facebook page, Mike Rees, Independent Candidate for Wiltshire PCC. I didn't bother with a website this time because basically couldn't afford it. If I'm not going to lie, you know, you know, we are trying to raise money. This, again, I didn't want to do this, but my supporters have really generously donated to try and get some leaflets together. Whether we'll get to a point where we've got enough, I don't know. But if you look on my page, there's a GoFundMe link there. But ultimately, you know, I've got no issue with any of the other candidates. I'm not in here to slag them off. They can say what they like about me. I'm just here as the alternative option to a politician. You know, and if I don't get elected, I'm not going to lose any sleep. I'll tell you that now.
Yeah.
I'll still be carrying on my businesses with my boxing and having a great time. So, you know, the choice is for the Wiltshire Republic. I'm just here as another choice for you, a non-political independent candidate for the Police and Crime Commissioner for Wiltshire. And I wish the other candidates all the best.
Mike, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, David. Nice talking to you again.
And there you have it. That was Mike and his reasons for going again for election. And I wish him all the luck, because Wiltshire could definitely do with somebody independent with some new thinking. And as always, thank you very much for listening. And wherever you are, whatever you believe, please take care and be blessed.